Grace to you and peace from God who creates and redeems and sustains all things. Amen. It feels odd, at least to me, to be reading a text from the very end of John as part of, which is all part of the Passion story. In our gospel for today, Jesus is on trial and Pilate enters back into the headquarters and summons Jesus, and then asks him a really bizarre question. Are you, and in our text capitalized, King of the Jews? It's important for Pilate, because the question about Jesus, at least from Pilate's point of view, is not a religious one. In the end, it's none of his business whether or not Jesus has disrupted the religious life of his people. It's not Pilate's concern one way or another to deal with the internal religious politics of the Judean people. Now, we don't know with this text if Pilate is looking for a reason to charge Jesus, a reason to hold him, but he asks the question, are you the King of the Jews? It's salient because from Pilate's point of view, there can only be one king and one kingdom. The Roman Empire and Caesar. There is no room for anyone else. As Jesus often does, he sidesteps the question a little bit. And he says, do you ask me on your own, or did others tell you to ask me? Were you put up to this, Pilate? He wants to know. Why these questions about the kingdom? Finally, Pilate says, your own nation and the chief priests have handed you over to me. What have you done? And then these words. Jesus says, my kingdom is not from this world. My kingdom is not from this world. If my kingdom were from this world, my followers would be fighting to keep me from being handed over to the people. And then this is the line for the sermon today. But as it is, my kingdom is not from here. In other witnesses, it's my kingdom is not of this world, or my kingdom is not, of this world. But in the Gospel of John, it's my kingdom is not from this world. It doesn't have its origin here. Its authority is not from here. My kingdom is not from here. A really important line, I think, for those of us in modern history. Particularly here in the United States, we are unaccustomed to monarchical language. The language of the monarch and kingdom and kings and queens was something that we chose to put away at the founding of our nation, at least to some extent. As a matter of fact, one of the great wrestlings of our early formers of this nation was whether or not to have a monarchy. Members of the early formation of our nation finally decided we wanted a president, not a monarch. A limiting of powers, an election. It was a conscious decision. They had already lived under a monarch in a kingdom. This was to be a republic. Something different. A bold experiment. As a result, for us, we're not used to the words about kingdoms and kings. We're used to electing our leaders, not having them show up by fiat or by lineage. So I wonder how you hear this word, kingdom and king. for many people, it would have negative connotations. Can you imagine yourself in this country, in this time, in this place, having a king or queen to rule over you? It's almost unimaginable. Well, I bring all that up because, in fact, words do matter. That we call this Christ the King Sunday sort of is difficult for us. In some ways, I think it must be more difficult for the British, because they already have a monarch, and they're pretty clear about only having one. That word kingdom and king can for us bring up negative connotations of absolute and despotic power. But listen to Jesus. My kingdom is not from this world. It is neither rooted in, nor does it derive its power from humanity, from our weaknesses, from our selfishness, or from our lust for power. The kingdom that Jesus preaches and teaches and lives is not from this world. And yet, it is here. That is why Jesus stands before Pilate in our text today. It isn't that there isn't a kingdom. It isn't that it hasn't yet come to be. It's just not the kingdom everyone else is thinking of. Not Pilate, not the people, and at least not yet even Jesus' disciples. My kingdom is not from here, but it is here. And that kingdom will begin to unfold in a strange and powerful way as Jesus leaves the headquarters of Pilate and finds his way to Golgotha and to the tomb. It's not the ordinary way that you start a new kingdom. By dying. By giving up everything. And yet that's what Jesus does. It is curious to me that so often the hymnody around Christ the King Sunday is about power and glory and majesty and all of the things, as if we have put Jesus on the throne of a great monarch. It's not surprising, because that's the imagery that we have. It's what we've grown up with. It's what we know. I suspect that the TV audience in the U.S. for the coronation of a new king in Britain will be bigger than it will be in Britain. We're fascinated with it. But it isn't us. And it isn't Jesus. How can we begin to see that inbreaking of Jesus' kingdom in a different kind of way? We see the kingdom of Jesus more through the lens of the cross than through the lens of monarchy. Where kingdoms traditionally tout their military and economic power, the kingdom to which we are being invited is a kingdom where peace and love and mutual care reign. The kingdom to which you have been invited to live, that kingdom which is already here, is characterized not by your own ability to participate in what your value is to the kingdom, what you bring in and what you take, This kingdom is given as a free gift called grace. In many ways, it's a kingdom you don't even have to qualify for. Well, what kind of kingdom is that? I laugh because my wife's aunt, who has lived in Germany for the vast majority of her life, has recently been thinking about giving up her U.S. citizenship. She doesn't use it. She hasn't lived here forever. And she was surprised to find out to exit the kingdom costs about $3,000. But the kingdom of Christ costs nothing but the life of the Son of God, given freely for us. So I wonder how we can develop eyes to see that kingdom and hearts to live there. What if the invitation of Christ is now? What if the kingdom actually is here? What if we have been given the opportunity to live in a different kind of kingdom that exists right alongside and through and permeates the place where we live, but we simply can't see it or choose not to embrace it? It's odd, isn't it? How often we will choose the shackles of one kingdom over the joy of another and not even know we're making a choice. The beauty of Christ, this king, this ruler, this monarch, this lover, this presence, this spirit, this wholeness, is that that kingdom is not from this world, but it is here, right now, breathing and living in our midst and inviting us into the grace of God and love for one another. We could see the kingdom as a place where peace reigns, then war becomes unnecessary. If the kingdom where we live is a place where we are freely able to give to one another what is needed, then poverty simply isn't there. If the grace in that kingdom comes to all people, then there is no worth to be gained, no salvation to be earned, only a life of thanksgiving. Those are the hallmarks of the kingdom that Christ brings to the table. That day when Jesus meets with Pilate, Pilate has one agenda and Jesus a different. Pilate, one vision of a kingdom that cannot be overthrown, and Jesus, the vision of a kingdom that unfolds even to this day. So however you say it, whatever word you use, whatever language you put to it, Jesus' kingdom is not from here, but it is here. Amen. Our worship continues with our hymn of the day, O Christ, what can it mean for us?